This is the Between the Ropes podcast. I'm Brian Fritz. Thanks, everybody, for listening, for downloading the podcast, for subscribing. A lot to get to on this podcast. Not one, not two, but three interviews. That's right, three interviews on this podcast. Now, coming up later on, you will hear from Drew Galloway, as he'll be part of the big five-star wrestling show in Scotland this Saturday night that will air live on Spike TV in the UK. We'll also talk about what's going on with him and his potential future and how much the wrestling scene in the UK has changed. And also later on, we will talk to Charlie Ebersole, who is the creator and the director of the upcoming ESPN 30 for 30. This was the XFL that will be premiering on February 2nd on ESPN. But first, a conversation with AJ Styles, the WWE champion. He will put his title on the line Sunday at the Royal Rumble live on the WWE Network. AJ will be squaring off against John Cena. So we talk about his chemistry with Cena. They've had some great matches already. Plus, we talk about his first year in WWE and the potential of a couple of his buddies joining him on the main WWE roster and more. So let's get right into it. Here is my conversation with WWE champion AJ Styles. He is the WWE champion, the phenomenal AJ Styles. This Sunday at the Royal Rumble, he'll be facing John Cena, which everybody can watch live on the WWE Network. Does it feel like it's been a year since you joined the WWE?
It feels like I've been here a lot longer than that. You know, the WWE feels like home, man. This is which is a good thing, you know. Yeah, only a year, but it feels like I've been here about 10.
Do you know how long you've been champion for?
I want to say 4 or 5 months.
137 days.
Well, there you have it.
You know, that's a longer title.
That's not bad.
That's not bad. That's longer than Ric Flair's 2 title reigns, Eddie Guerrero's title reign, Roman Reigns' 3 title reigns. So you're doing pretty good so far.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. Well, that's something to be proud of there. I'll take it.
When do you think Vince McMahon realized what he had with you?
It's hard to say. I do know it was his call to have me face Roman Reigns in the first place. So, it had to be, you know, within, yeah, you know, gosh, the first couple months I'd been there, you know, he had to see something. So, yeah, definitely Vince's call had to be in the first couple months.
You and John Cena have had some fantastic matches already. I think everybody expects that again on Sunday. It seems like the chemistry has been instant. Have you felt that way too? Like it was just instant chemistry between the two of you?
Well, it's odd when you think about it because John and I are so very different in body types and in wrestling and pretty much everything. But there's, you know, if the whole thing is true about opposites attract, you know, it's got to be true with John and I as far as in the ring, man. We just work well together. It's just magic in there, and the chemistry is great. So, yeah, no, I don't think anybody would have expected it, but there's just something about the way him and I work together. It's just, it's great.
Obviously, there was a lot made on SmackDown in the back and forth between yourself and John about the SummerSlam poster with you being in the background and he being in the foreground. What was your reaction when you first saw that poster?
Well, you know, it's actually people reacting on Instagram and Twitter showing me what's up. And I think they were a little more upset than I was. I get, you know, what's going on here on the poster. Those are your stars who've been here for a long time. So I get it. Or they're in marquee matches as well. Faces that people recognize. And, you know, while don't get me wrong, I'm not happy with it. You know, I think that the WWE champion should be definitely up front. But at the same time, I understand the reasoning for the poster.
So has there been any plans or any kind of talk about you going on the Today Show to get your moment of rebuttal, considering that they called you the guy from Atlanta?
No, I don't think they want to hear what I have to say. And, you know, you would think that, you know, on Today Show, they'd have people that research at least what John Cena does for a living. But apparently they don't, because the chick had no idea what John did, you know. So it is what it is. There's no rebuttal coming. It doesn't look like, you know, but I would love to get on there and do that.
Especially with Al Roker. Al should know better. Come on.
Yeah, Al was, you know, Al made fun of my hair. I don't know if you saw that, but I think that's just a little bit of jealous, you know, from Al being just jealous, you know, that the fact he has no hair, you know.
Do you realize the firestorm that you started a few months ago when you said you had to face Shawn Michaels at the Royal Rumble?
I didn't realize, you know, I was just retweeting a picture that I thought was really cool. I didn't know people would see it like that. And but shoot, you know, if it got Shawn Michaels back in the ring again, that it was worth it. But you know, I got to respect Shawn for saying he, when he retires, he's going to be retired. That's, he's not going to go back his word or go back on what the Undertaker, you know, basically made him retire, you know. So, and he said something pretty cool, at least I thought it was him who said that you know, everybody wants to see LeBron James and Michael Jordan go at it, but that's just not going to happen, you know. And I appreciate the fact that he's Michael Jordan and LeBron James, you know.
Well, another guy that he brought up that he said, you know, he's not coming back, but if he ever was going to, another guy that he thought he could do something cool in the ring with was Samoa Joe. And there's been a lot of buzz about him possibly moving from NXT to the main roster. What would it be like for you to possibly have Joe around again and a potential opponent, considering that the history that you guys have?
Well, Joe is an amazing wrestler. There's no doubt about that. Always has been. And Joe's one of my really good friends. So it's just a matter of time before he's on the roster. It wouldn't surprise me if he showed up on Sunday. You know, there's always surprises in this Royal Rumble, and you try not to get surprised. You kind of see it coming, but that's what makes the Royal Rumble so fun. And if Joe doesn't show up on Sunday, he's definitely going to show up soon. I know it.
Do you practice your surprised face for when you're in the ring at the Rumble in case there is a surprise entrant?
Well, the good thing about that this year, I don't have to because I'm not in the Royal Rumble.
That's right. Yep. You're not in the Royal Rumble. What was I thinking? Yeah, because last year, I mean, the I love how Roman Reigns is, you know, look when he saw you come out. That's like turned into a meme now that people have put with a ton of different things.
It was the face of, who the freak is this? You know, kind of guy. Whose music is this and who's coming out right now? Yeah, that was pretty good.
So, obviously, we're now on the road to WrestleMania, which is, you know, coming up here in a few months. When do you start thinking about WrestleMania?
I think, you know, for me, as far as I know, I could be wrong about this, but I do believe after the Elimination Chamber match, I'm basically on the road to WrestleMania, so therefore that's when I'll start thinking about it.
The last time that I saw you was a couple of days before SummerSlam, and about 20 feet away from us was Bill Goldberg, and you had commented that you had never met him before. Have you had that?
Right.
Have you had that moment yet to meet?
Yeah.
Bill?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Bill's a good dude, man. It was good to meet him, and just, you know, let him know that I, you know, hey, I'm a Georgia guy too, and you know, just meeting the guy, it was cool.
And now you've got your Falcons going to the Super Bowl.
That's it, man. I mean, that's huge. I mean, the Falcons, now, let me give you a little bit about the champions from my hometown. Deshaun Watson, also from Gainesville, Georgia, led the Clemson Tigers to the national championship. The Falcons now, not out of Atlanta, by the way. I don't know if you knew this. They're in Flyer Branch, Georgia, which is Hall County, and of course the city of Hall County is Gainesville. So yeah, a lot of champions coming out of Gville here lately.
I was gonna say, is it gonna be renamed the City of Champions?
It should.
I mean, a big billboard coming into the city, your name on it, Deshaun Watson, maybe the Falcons.
Yeah, maybe definitely Deshaun Watson for sure.
Last couple of things, you know, I mentioned Samoa Joe and the buzz around him. There's been a lot of buzz about Kenny Omega. Obviously, you know him well from your days working over in New Japan, about what's going to be his future. What would you think about him coming to the WWE? What kind of impact do you think Kenny could have if he made the decision to go there and WWE wanted him as well?
Well, I think that, you know, the same kind of impact that I had here. I mean, Kenny's amazing. I mean, the stuff that he does, and I know I've used that word with two different people, Samoa Joe and Kenny Omega, but really though, they are. They've made an impact anywhere they've ever been. You know, they always like have been talked about. Definitely, you know, if Kenny, you know, wanted to come here, I think he could do well. I mean, this is top of the line. This is where you go. It's the WWE. Everybody knows that. Even if you work somewhere else, you know that WWE is the place to be. WWE gets more eyes on it than any other place in the world.
So you recently had a couple of items taken from you at a show. Has there been any update from the police yet? Have they found your stolen belongings?
No luck yet. You know, I'm thinking about putting out a tweet out there. Maybe I'll give a little reward in Jonesboro, Arkansas, if I wants to turn the guys in. We'll see. But nothing yet. I didn't get robbed, by the way. I got stuff stolen from me. A lot of people were thinking that I was robbed at gunpoint. I was not. It was something that was left, trying to get out of the building a little, you know, as fast as I could, because I'm ready to get to the hotel, get to bed. And for some reason, I forgot one of my most important items, my baby, if you will. And, somebody took it.
Last thing. So you are still on the top of your game, WWE champion. You're as good as you ever have been. Considering the success that you've had in WWE so far, does it make you think you want to continue your in-ring career a little bit longer than maybe you had been planning previously?
You know, I've thought about that, and yeah, maybe so, but that's all going to depend on my body. If my body's able to do what I'm still doing right now, I've got one gear, and if I can't get into that one gear, it's time for AJ Styles to retire. That's what made me who I am, and that's why people call me phenomenal, you know. So I still want to be that guy, but if I can't, then it's time for me to retire.
The Royal Rumble is coming up on Sunday. Everybody can watch it live on the WWE Network, including AJ Styles against John Cena, WWE Championship on the line. Always appreciate the time, AJ, and looking forward to the show on Sunday.
All right, my friend. Take care.
I expect another great match from AJ and Cena coming up on Sunday at the Royal Rumble. I think everybody does. And I don't think it's wrong to expect that because they have such great chemistry together and they're both great workers. So that's going to be a lot of fun to see them at the Royal Rumble. Speaking of the Royal Rumble, so I'm putting out this podcast here on Thursday afternoon. Coming up later on tonight, Friday morning, you can check out another Between the Ropes podcast. That'll be myself and Michael Wiseman doing our regular weekly podcast. And we will be previewing the Royal Rumble, all the rumors, all the speculation, all the different thoughts that we have about the Rumble, which is coming up, of course, on Sunday. So make sure that you tune in to that podcast as well. Plus, I already put one up today, and that is the NXT TakeOver conference call with Triple H, as he talks a lot about what's going on with NXT, possible tournaments that are coming up, the cruiserweight division, some things that have been going on when it comes to contracts with UK talent. He also talks about NXT, and of course, he talks about TakeOver, which is coming up on Saturday, the night before the Royal Rumble. Let's get to the next interview. Drew Galloway, who is just one of the top stars outside of the WWE anywhere. I mean, he's been tearing it up everywhere over in the UK, Evolve, TNA Wrestling. Since he's left WWE, he has done so many great things so far and just shown what an awesome worker that he is. And you could tell that he is having a lot of fun. So Drew made the announcement a couple of weeks ago for the show that's coming up this Saturday night. And that is the Five Star Wrestling Show in Scotland, where he is from. And this is going to be a show that will be broadcast live on UK television. So we talk about that, and we talk about the boom on the UK scene when it comes to wrestling, which has just been going crazy with all the different promotions there. Plus, WWE just did the UK tournament as well. So a lot to talk about with Drew. Plus, we talk about his future, because it is no secret, and he has let everybody know as well, his contract with TNA is coming up. So we will discuss the potential of his future and lots more. So here is my interview with Drew Galloway. He is Drew Galloway. I'd like to say what promotion he's with, but basically he's with almost every promotion in the world these days, especially if it's on the UK scene. Drew Galloway is a part of it. Does that sound about right?
I think that's safe to say. You know, you're about accurate there. pretty much anywhere that's got a bit of buzz going, or anywhere that I can help get to that next level, you'll probably find Drew Galloway. Looks like a superhero wrestling, I'd say.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. So the big show, or the latest big show, is coming up this Saturday, January 28th. Five Star Wrestling will be live on Spike TV in the UK. Yourself, Rey Mysterio, John Morrison, Carlito, among the many that are going to be a big part of this show. This is a really big deal, obviously, because of the rise of UK wrestling. But to have a show of this caliber with these kind of names and to be live on Spike TV, can you explain, you know, how big of a deal it is for UK wrestling for a show like this?
It's incredible. It's just one thing after another when it comes to the UK scene. Like, I've been fortunate enough to be there the past, you know, nearly 2.5 years and watch it grow and grow and grow. And obviously the World of Sport just happened live on ITV to over 1 million people. And this is the next step. This is the first live British show ever. I think there might have been one in like the 50s for Prince Philip, perhaps. But like, this is the first live show. It's live on Spike TV. They've commissioned a series already for the summer on Spike and Channel 5. So this is a huge deal. And the way I always put it for this one, World of Sport is all the British guys. When I first started, there was nothing in Scotland, barely anything in the UK. We all aspired to get to America. I was the first ever Scotsman to get to America. And now, all the best in the world aspire to get to the UK, and it all starts this Saturday in Scotland, which is absolutely amazing.
So what does this mean to you personally, as somebody that obviously is from that area? You have you started off your career in that area, you care about that area, and you want to see it continue to grow and do well. What does this mean personally for you to have an event like this come Saturday?
Like I just said, it's in Scotland. When I first started, there was nothing. When I say nothing, I traveled 12 hours just to learn to wrestle. And now the idea that the first live show ever in British wrestling is taking place in my own country. And I'm a featured player. I'm the guy that did the announcement. You know, things are just... It's hard to put into words, mate. Like, it's just a really, really cool state of affairs in the UK wrestling. And this thing is just going to take it to the next level. And like I say, it's not a one-off. There's already the series commissioned. This is just phase one to get everyone, you know, a taster for it, dip their foot in the water, and then it's go, go, go from there.
Why do you think it's taken so long for this sudden rise in UK wrestling? Or at least it feels sudden to some of us that are not there all the time or haven't been exposed to it. Because for somebody like me, I'm sitting there going, this is just like this huge explosion that's just like hit over the last year. I mean, we hear little bits and pieces and you hear some names, but especially over the last year, there's so many different promotions that have come up and are doing like big business now. So, you know, why do you think this is all happening right now?
It's hard to, you know, pinpoint it. Like, wrestling in general, like, as I say, the past 2.5 years, I've been all over the world, every country, and I've watched it grow, and every country has been growing. But the UK in particular, like, when I first started, there was nothing. And after I was wrestling for 6 years, I started at 15. When I was 21, I got signed to WWE. By the time I was around 20, there was a little thing going on here and there. You know, myself and Sheamus were the main guys over there, but there really wasn't many guys, and we all wrestled the same kind of style. And I think since I left, you know, a lot more people that I worked with started their schools, started training the new generation, got better, brought people over and knew what they were doing. And just over the years, people got better and developed their own style. Since we were all wrestling the same style back then, which was kind of British-American hybrid, and then everyone started developing all these styles. And when I came back, I noticed the talent level had increased massively. And suddenly, there was all these phenomenal in-ring wrestlers and all these phenomenal characters, like a Grado, for example. And there was just a lot going on. So when you've got that plethora of talent, it wasn't there when I left, finally getting exposed, coming to America. I was doing the American indie scene. It was just me. Then all of a sudden, I'd see Zack Sabre Jr. Then it'd be Marty Scurll. Then it'd be Tommy End. And there was the British Invasion. And then once people got a taste of that, they started, you know, hearing about the buzz in the UK. I was with ICW. I started exposing people to ICW and the phenomenal crowds. And they started watching. And just through, you know, things like that, and people again exposed to the phenomenal scene, you know, they really started picking up on it and latching onto it, because there is no scene, there is no crowds like the UK, and, you know, there's no place to be like the UK. And I can't believe this show is in bloody Scotland, the country I'm from. Where was this when I started? God,
tell me about it.
31.
So you mentioned, you know, that the audience is there. Why are UK crowds so crazy?
I'll always use the same example, but I'll hit you with it again. I think it's the, you know, sports mentality we have when it comes to our, you know, soccer, football. It's the real football. It's the ball you kick up your foot.
The fans are just absolutely wild. I've been to every sport in America you can imagine. I've been to American football games. I've been to baseball games. I've been to ice hockey. And every single time I'm there, the people are into it. They clap. They react to what's happening. But they don't get emotionally involved. Kind of like wrestling fans sometimes. You don't want them to clap for your moves. You want them emotionally involved. But anytime anyone gets emotional, they stand up. They get into the game. They're admonished in America. Like all the other fans look at them in disgust almost. If you're in the UK and you're at a football game and you're not emotionally involved, you're not standing up for the like the entire match. You're not getting into it. You're not swearing at the players. You're not acting absolutely wild. Then you're going to just get crap. You're going to get beaten up by somebody in the crowd. And that's what our fans, the difference is. Like, they are emotionally involved. They're all wild. They're crazy. They're up. They've got their chants. They've got their little things they do. They need their own page on the roster. They're just so, so passionate, and they're not afraid to let themselves get lost in wrestling.
You said, where was this when you were coming up? So if this had been around, if this scene had been even close to what it is right now, do you think you would have already gone to WWE, or do you think you would have hung around the UK scene longer?
That's the thing. There's options now. Like when I was younger, there was one goal. Like, I'm going to get to WWE. I had no other thought in my head. Everyone said to me, you know, Drew, no Scotsman's ever been signed before from Scotland. What makes you think you'll be the first? And I kept saying, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. I don't care. And I kept working. I got to 21. So fortunate to get signed because that was the goal, lifelong goal, but there was no other option. So I didn't have the choice, basically. These days, the UK scene on fire, and you hear the names like Rey Mysterio, Morrison, etc., coming to the UK, and people from America and the UK, US Indies, or Australia, wherever I am, they're all telling me, hey, Drew, can you get booked in the UK? Everyone wants to come. So it's so bizarre that things have flipped. People don't want to go to America anymore. Everyone wants to come to the UK. Everyone wants to be part of this show in Scotland, because I can assure you, everyone's messaging me saying, hey, can you get me booked on that show, brother?
Yeah, it's crazy when you talk about these different groups like ICW and What Culture and OTT and Progress and Rev Pro. I mean, all of those have just hit the scene so big. And then WWE obviously just did the UK tournament that they did. Did you get a chance to check out any of that?
I've seen bits and pieces. I've not had a chance to watch it properly as I did not stop moving during that period. I think I was in the UK for 2 days for What Culture, where I'm actually the champion right now. The place is phenomenal. I jumped into TNA tapings on the Saturday, taped right through to the Thursday, and then I went to the Scotland to do the press conference on the Saturday from Scotland. Then went to London to film a commercial, and then I came back during this week to hang out with the wife and the cats for a little bit. And then I leave again tomorrow to do, obviously, the event. And then on the Sunday, I've got the What Culture again, and then the following week, we've got ICW in Newcastle, if anybody's listening, and check out the Square Go. I think there's like 20 tickets left if you want to snatch those up. So I've not had a chance to sit down and watch wrestling yet. I told the wife, okay, I'll switch off on the wrestling. Clearly, I'm still talking about it on the phone when she's sitting in the car. We're about to go eat and go to a movie. So there's not much turning off. I still got to do my job. I still got to do my media, etc. But I've not got to watch any. So I've seen clips here and there, and I'm glad that some of the lads like Trent and Wolfgang did so well and got some more eyes on them.
Yeah, I was going to say, which guys in that tournament do you know pretty well, and who have you even been in the ring with?
I've been in the ring the majority of them. I've still not worked Pete Dunne. I've been in a few shows on the What Culture. I know he was looking good in it. And Wolfgang, I started, his first wrestling lessons kind of helped. Showing him what I was learning in England. There's only a couple of years age difference, and I would travel to England, learn what I was learning at the FWA Academy in Portsmouth, 12 hours away. We started something in the UK and Scotland, and I started showing the guys in Scotland what I was learning at the school there. Wolfgang was one of those young guys I was showing the moves to, and we came up together. We tried to help each other learn as we started putting on shows, and I've watched him grow into this, monster, athletic, incredible wrestler that he is today. So I was so proud to see him in there. And Trent Seven is an absolute awesome guy, a phenomenal wrestler and a great talent. And Tyler Bate, I wrestled him last year, I think. I got told he was 18, which blew my freaking mind. And he's a strong kid. So it's not looks so tall, but my God, is he strong? Like, I'm 6'5", 6'7", when I got the old boots on, and he threw me about like a toy.
There's been a lot of talk recently about a couple of those groups over in the UK possibly streaming on WWE Network. What do you think that would do for the UK scene if that was to happen?
I think it's only going to help grow it to that next level. Like, that kind of publicity on the network to millions of people, I can't see how it can be negative. Like, you put somebody on the network and they're doing the local shows and you put their face on the poster and people recognize them from the network, then it's just going to grow the scene, I believe. Like, it keeps getting bigger and bigger. When I came back to ICW in my return night, it was 1,500 people there, which was phenomenal for the time. The show we just did there was 6,200, and you had Finn Balor hitting me with a pipe. You know, he's working with, obviously, WWE, and I'm in the TNA. Anything can happen. Right now, you get the guys on the World of Sport getting that kind of exposure. The guys appearing on the network, you put those guys' face on posters. It just means more people coming to the show, which means more money for the boys. It means more people can make a full-time living as professional wrestlers. So I can't see, you know, any negative in it. It's just one more thing, along with the Live Spike TV thing, to get British wrestling to the next level. And all the eyes of the wrestling world are on the UK scene.
I was going to say, what's the experience like for you as a wrestler? In this day and age, you're a guy that works for all these different promotions, including TNA, and you're in an ICW ring, and you've got a WWE guy attacking you. I mean, what the hell's going on here?
Funny. I mean, in 2016, I had one after another. Like, Johnny Gargano and I were, you know, the first ever Evolve Tag Team Champions. He was in, you know, NXT. I was in TNA. Then I became the TNA Heavyweight Champion, and he was, you know, wrestling in NXT every week. So that was, like, phenomenal. And just one thing after another would happen, and their WWE are allowing, you know, people that kind of freedom. And, like, they're just providing that for the wrestling fans, giving wrestling fans these unique opportunities. And I never thought for a second that, you know, Finn in his first appearance since he got hurt after winning the Universal title would be in the ring costing me in the biggest match, which I just got cleared from the injury that ICW has ever done. And one of the biggest moments of my wrestling career, being part of that as the first company I did. And then being part of that big show and watching it grow through there and watching what was happening at the time, I just went to the back, sat down, and burst out laughing with Mark Dallas of what we achieved.
You know, you had said after you left WWE, you were on this mission. You kind of had this mission statement of what you wanted to do, what you wanted to be going forward with your career. Do you feel like it's been accomplished so far? Do you think it's been mission accomplished for you?
Yeah, the last thing on my list was get British wrestling back on TV. So I'll be ticking that off on Saturday. It's crazy because I went out for that promo and like really caught the world's attention, really put eyes on ICW, which was my intention, as well as getting my mission statement out there. Mick Foley put it over in his podcast. And, you know, why didn't you give this guy a mic? But the thing is, as everyone's found now, as I've found, that I don't do promos. I just speak my mind and you know, everything is really real. And I was, as far as a lot of people knew, I was a 3MB guy saying all these things. You know, people kind of knew what I could do. All the boys that wrestled me knew what I could do, but I've been doing the 3MB thing for a while. So a lot of people around the world could have been like, this Drew McIntyre saying he's going to take over the world and going to put British wrestling on TV and ICW are going to grow. And what is this ICW? What's an ICW? And I said some pretty bold things, but everything has happened. And ICW, the biggest independent show of all time. And on Saturday, we put it back on TV, and it's crazy to be smashing these goals. But it's not a case of I'm sitting down and I'm going, yes, I did it. The end. It's 2.5 years, mission complete. It's a case of, wow, set more goals, keep achieving. You know, Vince said I was the chosen one. Finally, the world was seeing that I'm wrestling's chosen one, and I'm going to keep setting goals, and I'm going to keep smashing them every single time.
Could you have ever imagined that wrestling would be this enjoyable? Because obviously, people go through ups and downs in their career, whatever it is, but especially, you know, in the wrestling profession. Right now, it seems like you are having as much fun as enjoying wrestling as anybody can.
I'm having the absolute time of my life, and I've always had like fun. I've never had a real job. I've always been fortunate. My part-time job has always wrestled since I was a kid, but I was at school at the same time through university. I got signed at 21, straight to America. I've done it full-time. I had fun at WWE no matter what happened. The ups and downs, as far as the public were concerned, I was living my dream and you know, doing what I always hoped to do, and was so fortunate not to have a real job. And then the past 2.5 years, that's a different level. And now that I'm going back home in my own country with my family around me, doing this huge thing, doing a live show, the first ever live show, and being the face of it, it's just, you know, when you're having fun, you're making money, and you're doing it in your own country, and you're living your dream, you know, that's the best way to put it. That's truly living the dream.
You mentioned the injury, and obviously you got banged up, and you were, you know, sidelined for a little over a month there, a little while back, or a couple of months. How much did that injury change your outlook on your career? I mean, or did it even change, like, the way that you look at your career now and how you choose different things and even on where you're going to work going forward?
It was the biggest scare of my entire career. Like, when I landed, I literally heard a snap, and I got terrified, and I had to, you know, the old movie montage go through my head of my whole career, and then the what could have been, and I was checking my fingers right away, just because I was like, oh my God, the first thing people say is they lose feeling in their fingers and toes. I didn't feel any numbness or anything, so that was a good sign. I came to the back, was a bit worried, went to the hospital, got an x-ray, they said, seems okay, which is a good sign, obviously, but, you know, maybe check it out. So I got an MRI when I got, it happened in Newcastle, England. I got it checked out when I came back to America, and, you know, they checked my neck, even though I told them it wasn't my neck, it was my upper back. And then as soon as they did the neck, they were kind of fumbling around. They said, you got to go right back in again. And an MRI is not the most comfortable thing if you've ever had one. For 30 minutes lying there in the same position. So I was back in for another one. And then I went to the doctor. And also, they told me you can't get results for another 24 hours. So thankfully, my wife knew somebody, got the results, went straight in to see him. And he looked at me and said, Drew, you're a very lucky guy. I've never seen, you know, anyone get away with something like this so often. I don't see many guys your age with these kind of fractures, but also you're very fortunate. I'd fractured my upper back, a couple of them, but it never touched the nerves, nowhere near the nerves. And it was going to heal, like he told me, within 6 to 8 weeks. And he just said, like, he couldn't reiterate enough, like, how fortunate I was and how much worse it could have been once he saw the bump that I took. And it was lucky it wasn't my actual neck and wasn't any nerve damage or, you know, surgery or potentially even worse. So I really got away with it there, and it did change my perspective of taking dangerous moves, because I took a move a guy my size shouldn't be taking from a smaller guy, and you know, that will never happen again. And, you know, like you say, when it comes to my mad schedule, maybe I won't be diving from one side of the world to the other. Maybe stick to the Europe every 2 weeks, not dive into different continents every couple of weeks, and, you know, preserve the body a little bit. But yeah, I was very fortunate. I was back in the ring within 10 weeks, I think it was. I was back actually doing shows within about 6 weeks, doing promos for Evolve and ICW, and then back in the ring in 10 weeks for the big show. So, you know, I really got away with it there. I'm so fortunate. And yeah, I guess my spine was designed for wrestling, according to the doctor. Like, all my, it was a big sponge, I guess, around my spine a lot more than most people. And, you know, he informed me that you're looking good for a guy that's been wrestling 16 years.
Yeah, ain't that the truth? So you've got a big decision to make coming up here. I mean, it's no secret that your TNA deal is expiring here in the coming weeks. And you've got some options. So, I mean, you're in a really good position right now. So how difficult is this decision? Has it been weighing on you for a long time, or is it something that's been a little bit easier than maybe we thought?
I'd say more on the difficult side. There's a lot going on with the company and a lot of changes for the better. My contract is up right now, and I've said it already. I'd be lying if I said it. I've spoke to people about potential options, and like, one thing from the injury is you do think of the future, and you do think this isn't forever, even though I'm still pretty young, and I do have a wife and a house and a future, and we're like a family one day, and you got to make the best decision for them. So I really do have some thinking to do. There is literally a few weeks, because a lot of thinking is going to be done like very quick. But I'm going to do the best, what's best for the family for sure, and I'm going to be, you know, figuring things out, hopefully with TNA, and we're going to hopefully iron something out that won't change what I'm doing. I really enjoy what I'm doing, that I'm able to work with them and also work with everyone else and help boost their business around the world. So I always saw it as a, you know, a tag partnership. Like, I come in, do what I can for them, but also go and build my brand elsewhere, which in turn, the bigger my brand gets, it helps them. And, you know, that's some of the main reasons I never signed the exclusive deals they offered to me that were all over the internet. So everybody knows about them, because the internet knows more about my career and my workplace than me.
Of course we do.
But yeah, I did, you know, turn them down for that reason, that I've got, you know, I'm on a mission from God right now, and I'm not ready to stop in one place. So I do hope it works out the way I want it to work out. I'll put it that way.
I was going to say, you have not made a decision yet. It's still kind of up in the air.
I've not made a decision yet.
Have you figured out, or have you thought about how, once a decision is made, how you're going to announce that? Or do you have a certain date by when you want to announce something?
Nah, I'll probably just walk out on the show.
That makes sense. We always like surprises, right?
If you've seen any of my surprise appearances at some places, I tend to just have the lights go up and pop up somewhere, or I'll just reappear. It's like the next few weeks of TNA TV is going to be real good stuff. I really enjoyed the last tapings, and you know, the idea in the back of my mind that maybe my last one was kind of bothering me. And someone's trying to ask me questions while I'm on the phone right now. Damn, I'm doing an interview one. But it was crossing my mind that that's maybe the last one, but I never let that on and just gave it my all. And Moose and I had a really good few matches, so it's going to be some good TV over the next month. And I walked out there, like, you know, hoping this is not the last one, but in the back of my mind thinking, you know, it could be, so enjoy every minute of it.
Last thing, so Kurt Angle is going into the WWE Hall of Fame. You've got an opportunity to be in the ring with him. I knew that you grew up being a big fan of his, like so many other people. What are some of your favorite memories of being around Kurt?
He's the man. Like, it's so cool with someone, like, I always get, you know, credit for my work ethic, etc., and going hard in the ring when you're around somebody like Kurt, who is the epitome of work ethic and pushing your body to the limits. It's real cool, and to learn from him. And, you know, when we had the first match, I didn't know if we were going to get a match. They announced his retirement matches, and I got told you're going to have one of them, then you're going to have another one in the UK. And once we had that first match, and I guess once he kind of felt what I could do in the ring, we sat down, and he kind of looked at me and said, you know, what possibly happened in WWE? Why are you not the champion right now? And for someone like Kurt Angle to say that to you, you're like, wow, that's pretty cool. Like, he's never said that before, and after we wrestled, he's saying these kind of things, and he really helped me from there, and just, you know, gave me a lot of good advice about things I was doing in the ring that were kind of unnecessary. So we do a lot, like, too much extra stuff. As long as I've been going, as much as I've learned, I still do far too much, and he helped me kind of put stuff in the right place, gave me some great advice. And on his last match, you know, I tapped out Kurt Angle. He put me over more than anyone could possibly put anyone else over, so he did so much for me, and I can't thank him enough. And to see him going to the Hall of Fame, it's where he deserves to go. Unfortunately, he was going to be on the show at the weekend. He's not anymore. So I announced he was going to be there, and then he wasn't. I was so devastated. but he deserves it, and I know it's something he wanted. It's something he deserves. I'm so happy for him.
Saturday night, Five Star Wrestling over in the UK, live on Spike TV in the UK. First live wrestling show there in since God knows how long. So huge event. Obviously, you're going to be a part of it. Carlito, Rey Mysterio, John Morrison, just some of the American flavor. That'll be a big part of that live show coming up on Saturday night. And everybody can follow Drew on Twitter. It's at Galloway Speaks. Always appreciate the time. Keep up the fantastic work, my man. And go get your dinner.
So I'm going. The wife's got the arms crossed, so it's time to leave for outside tsunami.
That's not good.
The life of a wrestler's wife. Okay, we're going to see Tsunami and go see Split. I'll see you all on Saturday live on Spike. Thank you, Brian.
Thanks to Drew Galloway for joining me. And you could tell, I mean, he's got a big decision on his mind. The great thing about Drew, he's got options. I'm not exactly sure what all those options are, but he's got some options. He's got some things on the table that he has to make a big decision about, that he has a lot to think about when it comes to his future, what's best for him and his family. And that's the great thing, is that he has options, and he should have options, because he has been fantastic since he left the WWE. He had ideas of what he wanted to do. He wanted to prove to everybody that he was a main player, that he could go in the ring with anybody, anywhere, at any time, put on a tremendous match. He could get on the mic and he can talk. And he has proven everybody that he is a top guy, that he is a proven commodity, and he has really upped his value. He's put in the work, and he continues to put in the work, and he wants to make something of himself, and especially of wrestling overseas, and he's definitely done that. He's helped put more eyeballs on the UK scene, and like I said, he's got a big decision to make, so we will see exactly what he is going to do. And I'm sure that we will find out what he's going to do sometime in the next few weeks. We just have to wait and see exactly what that is going to be. So one more interview to get to. The ESPN 30 for 30 doc, this was the XFL, is coming out on February 2nd on ESPN. Charlie Ebersole is the man behind the scene that put this documentary together. I got an opportunity to see already. It's a lot of fun, brings up a lot of memories. I remember when the XFL came out, I remember going to the first XFL press conference in Orlando. What a wild scene that was. And I even got to interview Vince McMahon. I've told this story plenty of times, I think, where I waited to go last to do a one-on-one interview with Vince McMahon. And the person in front of me did not believe that the league would be on the up and up. And Vince was trying to convince them and trying to convince them to come to Raw that night and was talking about what he does as Americana. And the person did not want to join. So my icebreaker after this kind of tense conversation that Vince had with somebody else, I get introduced to him. And the first thing I say was, hey, if you want to make me that same offer and put me up in a suite tonight for Raw, I will take you up on it. And Vince deadpanned me. No reaction. So at that point, I just looked down and started my recorder and we just dove into the interview. And by the end of it, everything was cool. I got like 5 minutes with him like everybody else did. And the funny thing was, at the time, WWE was leaving the USA Network to join Viacom and Spike TV. And they had also just made the deal to buy ECW. So I talked to them about that. And by the end of it, Vince was laughing because my final question was, how is the genetic jackhammer doing at home? And that got a nice laugh out of him. But it was a really good conversation with Vince. But he had high hopes for the XFL, as did a lot of people. There was a lot of controversy surrounding the XFL. It's still kind of a polarizing thing. And it's still something that people talk about to this day. And the documentary talks about all of that. They talk about the failures of the league, obviously. But they also talk about the successes of the league, too. And you know, Vince McMahon did this league with Dick Ebersol from NBC, and Charlie is Dick's son. So it was a very interesting perspective of Charlie doing this documentary, and he grew up being around the WWE as well, which we get into here. So let's get to the conversation. Here is Charlie Ebersol. ESPN 30 for 30. This was the XFL doc. It's going to be premiere on ESPN on February 2nd at 9 p.m. Eastern. Charlie Ebersol is the creator and director of the documentary. Right before we started taping this, I went in my closet and I couldn't believe I still had this. I have an Orlando XFL jersey from the introductory press conference.
Orlando Rage, baby.
Yes. It just says Orlando on the back because these were given out to the media during that press
before
conference.
Before they had names for the team.
Right. They didn't have a name for the team. They didn't have players. They didn't have anything.
No. They had nothing. When they originally when they announced the league and the cities, they had no team names, no players, no coaches, nothing. They had no apparatus whatsoever other than, well, they had Vince McMahon and the power of the WWE, and eventually they had NBC. But no, this was the very definition of an entrepreneurial endeavor.
So when you were growing up, and obviously, you know, your dad is Dick Ebersol, he goes into this partnership with Vince McMahon for this league, and Vince is the one that first comes up with this idea. Well, when did you first hear about it, and what was your first reaction to this idea of the XFL?
Well, I was a senior in high school when it premiered. So my junior year, Vince made the announcement February 3rd, 2000. And then my father and Vince officially signed their deal 6 weeks later and announced it. So I was going to boarding school. So I remember being in the cafeteria, watching on like late at night. We were in there and they were showing it. And I was thrilled because my childhood had been WWE. I mean, my dad and Vince created Saturday Night's Main Event together. So I grew up with like Hulk Hogan as my babysitter. And the idea that my dad and Vince were getting back into business was, I was over the moon.
What's your best story of growing up in the WWE locker room during Saturday Night's Main Event?
Oh my God. What is the parental rating on your podcast?
You can do whatever you like.
No, you know what? It's funny. I forgot this story, but Bob Costas retold it. It was mythical at the time. After an event in St. Louis, Bob, who had covered it in a tuxedo, at like 2 o'clock in the morning, everyone's done. They're finished doing all their stuff, and Hogan and Andre the Giant are starving, and so Andre, Hogan, and Costas get in a limo because that was like all the cars that were around the WWE at the time. And they find the only restaurant that's open at 2 o'clock in the morning in I want to say it was St. Louis. And it was a White Castle. And those guys hadn't, you know, they would come to the arena in their outfits a lot of times. So Andre's still in most of his outfit and Hogan is still in most of his outfit. And Bob is in a 3-piece tuxedo with tails and a top hat. And they walk into this White Castle to order dinner, for what Bob describes as, he says there's one person who's kind of passed out drunk at the table, and he looked up just long enough to see Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant walk in to order, like, you know, 60 hamburgers and then just pass back out. And I was like, that is so representative of the, like, circus slash carnival like experience that was, you know, the WWF. And by the way, it's funny, there's an Easter egg in the film. I'm actually in the film as a kid at WWE at one of the Saturday Night Main Events clips that we showed. And it's funny because we found all this footage, and my editor found stuff of me and my dad at the event, and I forgot, like, just how crazy it had gotten. But it was awesome. I'm a lifelong WWF fan. I was thrilled when they announced the league.
So when they announced the league, because your father had been so successful, Vince had been so successful, and about everything that they had touched, did you instantly think it was going to be successful, or did you think this might be a little bit something that's out of the norm for Vince and had questions about it?
No, I absolutely thought it was going to be successful. I'd never really seen my dad or Vince fail at anything, you know, up close and personal. So it didn't even occur to me that it wouldn't work. In fact, I remember leaving the Vegas game and my dad was depressed after the first game because I think he knew the writing was on the wall because the football had been so bad. I left the game, you know, it was a sold out stadium. We found out the next day 50 some odd million people had watched the game. Like, I was like, oh, just another giant success from Vince McMahon. And I think it took me a long time to figure out that it hadn't worked. And doing this film, which my dad, I think, accurately refers to as an autopsy, doing this autopsy on it, it's interesting because I think they were a lot closer to success than even they realized, but for some questionable decisions and incredibly bad luck early on. You know, I think we'd be enjoying year 16 of the XFL right now.
You know what the funny thing is? So, like, I was at the debut game in Orlando, and I was down on the field, and that place was sold out, the Citrus Bowl, the amount of energy in the crowd. I remember that they ran out of beer in the third quarter because it was wild. Yeah,
they did.
It was so wild.
And
there.
By the way, the thing about it was, the league, that game you saw was the best game of the whole season.
Right.
Like, or maybe not the best game of the whole season, but it's the game that they should have led with. And by the way, they were supposed to. 3 weeks before the league kicked off, that was the plan, was to lead with that game. And it was only at the last minute that they decided to switch to the Vegas game. And it ended up being a massive mistake because the Vegas game turned out to be a blowout. And that Orlando game was a really good game. I mean, it was like 34-37 or something like that. And you had even during the opening scramble, I think a player got hurt. Like, it sort of lived up to the promise of what the league was going to be.
You know, in the doc, I mean, you talk about all the different times that this league got snake bitten between, you know, the relationship that Vince had with the press, which was rather cantankerous to say the least, or when the blimp crashed, or, you know, you talk about the bad luck, the power outage during the week two game as it was on national TV, and then going long and missing the start for Saturday Night Live, and they were having a big show, you know, planned for that time. Is there any one of those that you can really pinpoint and saying, okay, that was, you know, one of the biggest things that led to the demise?
Nothing hurt them more, I don't believe, than the first game not being good. I think that really hurt them.
Yeah, because, I mean...
And I think that did irrevocable damage because the audience, and it was a massive audience, tuned in and saw a bad football game. And had they tuned in, I believe, and seen the Orlando game, look, do I think the league would have been massively successful? I don't know, but I know that you cannot show 54 million people that level of failure and expect them to tune in. And I mean, like, just for context, the New York team in that first game going into halftime had 34 yards of total offense.
Right.
I mean, you can't, you know what I mean? Like, the audience doesn't stick around for an NFL game when the ratings are that, when the game's that bad. And the promise had been so high in the marketing. So I think that I think that really screwed them. I think the big mistake more than anything was, you know, they did 7 months of marketing and they did 30 days of training camp. They probably could have reversed the polarity there a little bit and ended up with a better product.
Probably. Do you think if Vince had not had that relationship with the media that he did, because obviously, you know, he's passionate, he's fighting for his product, but if he hadn't had that kind of, if he hadn't gone after the media in the way he did, and maybe, say, the XFL didn't use some of the wrestling personalities and announcers that they did, do you think he would have been given a little bit more of a chance and possibly survived a little longer?
You know, it's funny. When I started making the movie, if you'd asked me that question, I would have said yes. But during the time in which I made the movie and premiered it, Donald Trump ran for president and won the presidency.
Right.
All the while picking fights with the press. So anything that I believed prior about what you did and didn't need in terms of decorum with the press was proved wrong by what happened in the election. And so I will tell you that I actually think that what the XFL proved to a certain degree, and then I think Donald Trump drove home, was regardless of what your relationship with the press is, your product has to live up. And I think, you know, right, wrong, or indifferent, Donald Trump consistently got a lot of people to show up to his events, and he was always true to his voice and always true to who he is, whether or not, you know, you agree with him or like him or whatever. My feelings aside, he delivered exactly what he said he was going to deliver. I think the XFL fundamentally didn't do that. And because it didn't do that, the audience was pissed and they tuned out. I think the press has been proven to be much more ineffectual than we like to think. But, you know, look, I think Vince McMahon became Vince McMahon because he was a controversial figure, because he was acrimonious with organizations, et cetera. And you look at the success of the UFC, everyone said that UFC was way too violent and it was illegal in New York when it originally launched. And, you know, it was not something that people could wrap their head around. Meanwhile, it sold for $4 billion and boxing is effectively dead. So I don't think that the promotion of violence or the controversy or any of that stuff hurt them. It's just they didn't deliver on what they were promising. When you tune into a UFC fight, you really do see hyper-violent, crazy athleticism. When you turn into the XFL, unfortunately, that first game, the game was just bad.
Yeah, because, I mean, so much was sold on, you know, blood and sex and violence, and this is going to be real football like it used to be. And, I mean, you got some of the sex, I'll tell you that. I mean, when you had strippers in a hot tub in the end zone, I mean, and some of the camera shots and stuff. I mean, like I said, I remember going to that Orlando game, and normally there's, like, cheerleaders on the field. They had cheerleaders on risers, like, right up in the crowd's face. And,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
You'd never seen anything like that before. You know, one of the big takeaways that I thought from watching the documentary as well was, you know, people always assume Vince McMahon is always so aggressive, and in a lot of ways he definitely is. And, you know, at the end of it, he had this really humanizing moment when he's sitting down with his private dinner with your father. Do you think the moment like that kind of changes the perception of him after people see, you know, how he goes after everybody? And then he has this really sweet moment at the end with your dad.
When I sold the film to ESPN, I told them that I wanted to make a film about the love story between my dad and Vince. And they sort of laughed. They were like, uh-huh. And I was like, you don't understand. You don't understand the relationship that I've seen. In fact, nobody has. I mean, one of the things that I'm probably the happiest about in terms of experiences that I got was I got to see their relationship up close and personal from a business and as a definition of what you want in two powerful executives, creatives, et cetera. And so I really wanted to bring that home in the film. That dinner was something that I'd been planning for a long time and didn't tell anyone. And then we did the interviews on the same day. And I said to them like a couple of days before, I was like, hey, can I buy you guys dinner and film it? And they agreed because it was at Vince's favorite restaurant. And the two of them sat down and I said, they were like, whoa, what do you want us to talk about? I was like, no, talk about whatever you want. I don't want to get in the middle of this. And so they just genuinely had dinner for like 45 minutes. And It's my favorite scene in the movie because it's the most human moment, and I think it's very, to your point, it's very unexpected. I hope it changes to a degree the perception of Vince, not the perception that Vince has cultivated, but what I want people to see is that I think that because of his bombastic approach and all this other stuff of what he sells, I don't think people really recognize what anyone who's ever spent time with him will tell you, which is nobody's handshake is worth more than that man's. He tells you something, shakes your hand. That is law as far as he's concerned. And he genuinely cares about the people he works with and loves them. And I think I wanted that to come to life to a very large degree.
Last thing, they allude to possibly trying to do something again, whether it's the XFL or something similar, or maybe even something with owners. Do you think they will actually try it, whether any one of those, especially if they try to do something, with football again?
Well, listen, the conversations are real. I mean, Jerry Jones has certainly explored it, and he and Vince's relationship is, fairly new in the last couple of years, as Vince just did a WrestleMania there last year. When I interviewed Jerry about it, he was like, look, if I was going to do it, he's the guy I'd do it with because he understands the marketing. Part of me thinks this. Vince spent the last 30 years building a massive global brand. And I think that he attempted a bunch of different things. He did the world weightlifting or bodybuilding championships, a handful in the XFL, et cetera. I think the XFL came the closest to working, but I also think that it sort of showed him how exhausting it is to dive into something completely separate in terms of a business. And I go back and forth. If anyone could do it, it'd be them. I don't know that there's somebody in the marketplace right now, because I know people are attempting new football leagues right now, Tom Brady's agent being one of them. I don't think there's anyone in the business that has the one requirement. I mean, you got to have the good football. That was a mistake the XFL made, but you got to really understand the marketing and how to get an audience to show up. Because if you don't get, they sold 1 million tickets that first season of the XFL. So do I think Vince is going to do it? I honestly don't know, because I think that's a function of whether or not he even thinks he has the time, energy, or interest. He certainly talks about it a lot. Someone's going to have to come along and do it, and it's going to have to be somebody who has that reach, like somebody who has that level of passion, like Dana White, if somebody had the type of backing, like the Fertitta brothers, maybe. But I think we'll see. I will say this. I think the market needs it. I think the NFL is running the risk of becoming boxing, and really needs someone to infuse it with some energy, and that's what the XFL did 15 years ago, and I think someone's going to do that again now.
Well, I would tell everybody to check out the documentary. This was the NFL. It will premiere on ESPN on
February. This was the XFL.
XFL. What am I saying? This was the XFL. Don't we all wish it was the NFL? I mean, come on. That's some money right there. This was the XFL. ESPN on February 2nd, 9 p.m. Eastern. I really enjoyed the documentary. Brought back some memories for myself as well. So congratulations, and hope everything goes well with the premiere, and everybody else enjoys it too.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. We're trying to break the record for viewership. The trailer that we released 6 weeks ago, or 8 weeks ago now, is the most viewed ESPN 30 for 30 trailer of all time. I would like this to be the most viewed XFL, and the only way to do it, or most viewed 30 for 30 film, the only way to do it is going to be with wrestling fans, because, they're the most passionate and loyal fans in the world. So I'm just hoping we get the word out and they really get on board.
I think the thing that's always really struck me with the XFL is, even, more than a decade after it's gone away, people still remember it and people still talk about it.
Yeah, that's right. I agree with them.
Crazy. So,
I totally agree with that.
Thanks again for the time. I appreciate it.
Have a wonderful day, man.
Thanks again to Charlie Ebersole for the conversation. I hope to get him back on again, because I would love to talk about his days of growing up in the WWE and just being around that scene, especially in the mid 80s and even earlier than that, which it had to have been a crazy scene to be there with everything that was going on at the time, and just seeing this company explode on the scene and being around Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant. And, he tells that one story there, but I guarantee there are probably 1,000 more stories where that one comes from. Quick reminder, check out the previous podcast, the NXT Takeover Conference Call with Triple H. The entire conference call is up. Plus, earlier in the week, my interviews with Bill Goldberg and Xavier Woods. And make sure to check out the upcoming podcast, myself, Michael Wiseman, as we will preview the Royal Rumble. Make sure that you subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Give us stars, rate and review the podcast. We love stars, so please do that. That helps us out a lot. You can also find the podcast on Stitcher, SoundCloud, Google Play, and the TuneIn app. So anywhere you want to get it would be great, but please rate and review the podcast on iTunes. That's very important. And also, please support Between the Ropes on Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/Between the Ropes. Even if it's $1 a month, that helps us out a lot when it comes to the cost of doing the podcast and helps keep us doing what we are doing. So any kind of support that you can give us there would be fantastic. You can also support us by sharing the podcast with other people. Tell other people about the podcast. And like I said, rating and reviewing it on iTunes. Did I say that already? That's kind of important. So you can follow me on Twitter. I'm @BrianFritz. Thanks again for listening. And I'll talk to you next time right here Between the Ropes.